You're listening to the Farmyard Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Farmyard. It's a movement, have you heard? And our Patreon supporters.
Episode 17, Biodynamics and Preparing for Fall, with host Linda Borgie and guest Stuart Lundy.
Well, hello there, Linda Borgie here from Farmyard. It's a movement, have you heard? So how's everyone doing this fine day? I hope you really liked the last podcast. I did that one. That was not an interview. That podcast was entitled August, The Taste of the August Sky in a Can. Yeah, boy, I tell you, I don't know what I would do if I didn't have food in a jar come the end of my harvest. I'd be pretty disappointed. And even though we are recording this in July, this is to be published in a late August, I have Stuart Lundy on the line once again from Perennial Roots Farm in Virginia, my biodynamic farming buddy who had lamby pies not too long ago, made me quite jealous. And what he is going to talk about today is what does it feel like for the fall? Is it different? You know, he discussed last time around, you know, how the earth breathes in and the earth breathes out. And if you didn't catch that episode, please be sure to take a listen to that. That would be the podcast for summer. So without any further ado, let me bring him on. Hello, Stuart.
Hi, Linda.
So how are you? I told everybody, as you could hear, that I was so jealous about your lambs. Busy, busy, busy time though, right?
It is. It's a crazy time. It seems like every single day there's something else to do and something else that I might have even forgotten. It's a lot to keep up with. It really is.
And that really continues throughout the whole season, even through what I found, my experience, even throughout the winter months, because those would be the times that I would be studying and reading and listening and investigating all the new things that are on the agricultural foodscape.
No, you're absolutely right. By the time that fall arrives, everything starts to shift over. And instead of being as quite as much transplanting and busyness on that end of the spectrum, it's more of harvesting and benefiting from the harvesting. And like you said too, we can up a lot of stuff, all sorts of tomato sauce and spaghetti sauce and all sorts of relish that we make from just about everything from the garden. And it's a different time and it's a different kind of busy. But it's one of kind of reaping the harvest. And then in terms of the gardens, it's really, we start to think about putting certain things to bed. In biodynamics in particular, it's not just that, you know, everything goes to bed and everyone has to deal with their garden in some way when they're shifting into winter. But in biodynamics, since we think about the earth as a living, breathing thing, and that in the summer it breathes out and in the fall and winter it breathes back in, it's actually important to, if possible, to open up the earth to facilitate that inbreathing. And that is one point where biodynamics might differ a little from organics alone, where it could be entirely no-till, whereas in biodynamics, there's actually an impulse to open it up and let it breathe a bit more.
And what method do you use to open your gardens up?
In my case, I use both a rod fork, which is great for anybody on a home scale or a small scale garden. And I also use a yeoman's plow, which if for those who aren't familiar with it, it's a large implement which has about 26-inch deep shanks that I use to rip through the soil. And it creates these really narrow furrows that allows air and water to get in through the whole fall and winter. And what that does is it allows the roots to get down, because if the water can't percolate through, neither can the roots. So what I'm really trying to conquer here is a hard pan from just conventional agriculture here that just they drove tractors over and over and over. And the result is you get this layer underneath, which is like concrete, and you've got to bust it up bit by bit. every year. And then eventually you're going to get that all filled with good deep root mass, which is, I mean, that's the basis of topsoil. So you get it deeper and deeper each season.
At what depth do you, now, how many years have you been farming this particular parcel?
We've been here since 2010, but we only incrementally took it over. So we started with a small plot around the home, because we were originally, we didn't get into this to farm. We were just growing stuff for ourselves, thinking we're going to feed ourselves. You know, you get one thing after another. You get chickens, you've got eggs. Well, then you need bacon. So we got and bit by bit, you, by just following the idea of, you know, being able to provide for yourself. And if you follow it out to its logical conclusion, you look back one day and find out, oh, you're a farmer.
Right. Exactly. Isn't it funny how it just takes over your being? I know I experienced the same thing. And really, that's my sinister plan, actually, because I know that if every single person that's listening to this right now went outside and dug up a 3-foot by 3-foot piece of their turf grass and replace that with some type of food, whether it be tomato or lettuce or kale. Eventually, once you get that into your mouth and into your bloodstream and you start to develop that relationship with that food, that plot gets bigger awfully quickly. And then before, like you said, before you know it, you turn around and say, gee, I think I'm a farmer.
Yep. And it can be on any scale. Like you said, if just starting in one small plot and the difference you get from something you grew yourself with the attention you gave it and the love you gave it, it's like nothing else. And it's a magical experience to start to participate with the land. And instead of just eating imported foods where it's from any old place, you actually start to be part of the area that you're in. And it plugs you into things in a way that, you know, it's not, oh, you know, it's not airy fairy. It's real. You're actually living off the land and with the land and with those seasons. And it's healthier food because those plants know how to live through the seasons. They'll help you live through the same ones.
You know, it's so funny, the term you used, you know, it's not airy fairy. It's funny because people do tend to say that, like when we talk about a life force, what is a life force? Here's my explanation of a life force. Let's pretend I'm lettuce, right? And I'm growing in California. I could even be organic lettuce. It doesn't matter. And I'm growing in California. And now, I have to be harvested. I have to be washed, dried, bagged, trucked, brought to the stupid market, put in your cart, put in your refrigerator. Now finally makes it to a salad bowl. That's life force. That particular food is lacking life force. And people say, well, what is it? And I say, well, you go on and take that trip. And at the end, tell me how you feel.
That's a great example.
Right. Yeah, it's that vitality. It's that feeling within you that you're alive. And, you know, every moment is thrilling because really that's how I really view my day from the moment I get up. When I open my eyes in the morning and it's only 3 o'clock instead of 4 o'clock, you know, it's like, oh God, I have to wait three hours and 15 minutes for the daylight to come before I can go out there and get, it's really something that's pulling. That's a life force. Like bees as an example, right? You keep a hive. I kept a hive before the bear ate it, right? Now bees in our country, we pack them up on 16 wheelers and then we ship them out to California to do the almonds. Then they go to Florida, to do the crops in Florida. Then they go to Maine. They wind up in Maine for the blueberries and we take the honey. And we replace it with high fructose corn syrup. Now, I would love someone to put some high fructose corn syrup in their jar, you know, and make that trip and see how you feel at the end of that journey. We have done things completely, excuse my French, ass backwards, but now we're reeling it in with this young man here, Stuart. I mean, you have no idea, Stuart. I live vicariously through you. I am so thrilled beyond my wildest dreams to have younger people manifesting biodynamics in real time. So outside of the earth breathing in and breathing out and opening up the earth with a broad fork or with a plow. And I'm going to ask you a favor. If you could, right after we get off this call, email me some photographs of that. I'd love to include that in the show notes.
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to do that.
That'd be great. So what are some of the other biodynamic activities that are taking place on your farm in the fall that would not necessarily be taking place on, let's say, an organic farm?
For us in particular, it's the time of year that we like to think about putting out the 500 horn manure. And that's just because everything's shifting over. You'll see leaves start to fall from the trees. And there's a life force active in the trees, and it's up in the leaves during spring and summer, and then in the fruit. And in the fall and winter, the tree is still very much alive, but most of its activities have moved down into the trunk and into the roots. So the 500, the horn manure in particular, is one that stimulates root development, root hair growth, which is the favorite food of earthworms that most people don't know. Earthworms absolutely adore roots, and they'll seek them out wherever they can find them, above ground, below ground. And the 500 in particular stimulates root hair growth, which just means instead of having a plant with just really simple roots, you get ones that have basically hundreds of miles of surface area. And that sort of difference really starts to transform the soil, because as a plant grows, and it grows, it's all those little root hairs, and those root hairs are constantly dying and shedding and dying and shedding. That is actually, it's almost like a benevolent infection, because you infect one plant in the field and the neighbor plant is going to catch that, and it just starts to spread. And this is something that we always make sure to add to the soil at least once a year, that really we do it much more often than that.
It's interesting, the analogy you gave, you know, saying that the life force, the being of the tree, you know, it's in the leaves, in the spring and in the summer, and then in the roots in the spring, in the fall and in the winter. You know, I grew me some shiitakes. I lived in an immature, oak forest. And from the, I would take trees down that were, 6 to 8 inches in circumference. And I did this in just before the oaks would leaf out.
Yeah. Okay. There you go.
Just before it would leaf out, because all of the food is in the trunk.
Absolutely.
And so then you cut those into 40-inch lengths and you inoculate it with the shiitakes, and, you know, and then they fruit. How exciting it was when my first shiitake log fruited. And just as a point of information, that, oak logs, inoculated can fruit for up to 12 years.
Yeah. There's a simple principle that a lot of people use about mushroom logs and how long they can fruit, is that for every inch in diameter is a year that mushroom will keep fruiting. So if you've got a 12-inch log, that's a 12-year fruiting cycle. And actually, if you have a 3-foot one, that's going to be 36 years that thing can keep fruiting.
So interesting. But see, the life force, it's in the breath. It's in the rhythm. It's in the tide. I mean, the tide goes in and the tide goes out. You know, if we watch these, if we become observant to natural processes that are right in front of us, you know, you actually can see this wonderful breathing process that the earth, that's taking place before our very eyes.
Yeah, you really can. When I look at a plant, for me, health is, it's not a complicated process. For me, health and life, it's the ability to produce form and to reproduce form. And I mean, the ability for the plant to grow and manifest itself, but also has the capacity to heal and to actually physically reproduce another. When a plant doesn't have that power, or we can only get it to fruit by applying synthetic chemicals to keep things off of it, pesticides, whatever biocide. If we live off that plant that has such a low vitality that it can't, from its own resources, reproduce, guess what? Our life force is going to be compromised. We're not going to be healthy because we're not going to be able to regenerate ourselves because we're living off something that requires synthetic chemicals. So guess what? Animals and humans that live off plants that can't get there by themselves, yeah, we're going to need all sorts of chemicals to be able to maintain our own health. And that's exactly what's happening in this country. And you said, too, like you transplant a plant and ship it all across the country. A lettuce that's been shipped from California, it's got jet lag and it feels pretty terrible. And you eat that, you know, you're compromising the nutritional quality of your food.
Most definitely. And I'm going to tell you a little story about my first experience with biodynamic food. So I was living in Bergen County and I was buying my food from a farmer that was in Bergen County. His name was Bruce. I forget his last name. But at the time, he was one of the leaders in organic farming in the country. And I'd go there and get all my food. And at one point in time, he said, you know, you ought to go up to that biodynamic community up in Chestnut Ridge. They have their places open on Fridays at 1 o'clock. And you could go have lunch there and talk to the people. I really think it would be a good match. So sure enough, the very next Friday, I was there at 1 o'clock. And I got online to get some lunch and I got a salad, a piece of bread and a bowl of soup. Now I'm going to tell you, I'm an Italian and we like the word abbondanza, abundance, right? This was the shallowest bowl of soup I had ever seen in my life. And the salad was maybe a half a dozen leaves. It really was not substantial. But anyway, it was delicious. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed my stay. Now we fast forward. Now that was Friday at 1 o'clock and I was in my 30s. Fast forward to Saturday around 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. In my mind, back of my mind, I said, oh God, I'm hungry. When did I eat last? And that happened to be the last meal that I had.
Huh.
And I said to myself, uh-oh, what's in that food? And that is what started me on this endeavor. Because anything that could have kept this busy mom of two running, you know,
sure,
without being hungry. Because if you don't have that feeling that I'm hungry, right? At least some people, myself anyway, I eat when I'm hungry. I don't eat if I'm not hungry. So I went a whole, you know, 24 hours on that shallow bowl of food. But now if we take a look at the masses in our country, just go to the beach, right? We're huge. We're obese. It's horrible. Why? Because we're consuming food, but we're starving. So the body is constantly hungry. It can't be anything other than constantly hungry because it's about a satiation point. And if we don't have nutrients, we can't reach that. Isn't that correct, Stuart?
Absolutely. Nutrient density in food. Once you've got enough nutrients, your body's like, oh, thank you. And then it's like, that's enough now. But what we're eating now is the equivalent to sawdust. And it doesn't matter how much we eat, well, our bodies will always be freaking out inside because we're missing key nutrients. And it's no one's particular fault. It's that just the food that they have is so hollow that they feel hollow and they just keep trying to fill that hole, and you'll get obesity out of that. Whereas you put someone on a normal nutrient-dense diet from their area and almost immediately you're going to see health benefits to that. It's not a cure-all, but it certainly helps. And like you, I actually went to a workshop with the biodynamic beekeeper, Gunther Hawk, and you know, children and the quality of biodynamic food is that he said, be careful or you're going to have more kids because this makes people and animals way more fertile if you're living off of nutrient dense food. For example, on our own farm here, the average litter for an American mulefoot hog is nationally, it's about 5 to 6. And whereas our hogs, our sows have 10 or 12, and that's pretty consistent through our different animals, is that we're getting litters that are over 2 times larger than the national average. So how they live and what they're growing on, it changes the fertility and the health of everything that grows on that.
Absolutely everything. And Gunter was my mentor. I was the first intern on the Pfeiffer Center Garden, and he was the gentleman that taught me biodynamics. Well, you know, you had mentioned earlier about Preparation 500, and I know that we have something cooking for the listeners insofar as an event that's taking place on your farm in October. Is that not correct?
That's right. We're going to do a workshop in October. And what we're going to do with that is we're going to have everyone who attends make the 500. And we could source the manure from a local organic farmer. By that point, we might even have our own cattle, which I'd prefer. But it's going to be really cool because we're going to dig up the 501 that I made over the summer. And we're going to put together horn manure and bury that here. I'm also going to make it so anybody who attends will be able to take home their own horn full of manure, and they can take that back and bury it at their spot. And then they'll have essentially an indigenous microorganism culture made specifically for their place. And because as it develops there over winter, it's going to become something that is meant for their place, just like food grown in a spot. If you ferment things in your spot, it's going to have a special relationship to that spot. And again, it's not airy-fairy. It's just this is the kind of life that develops in that spot. If you culture, you know, cider in one part of the country and another part of the country, it's just going to have a totally different microbiome. And that's exactly what people will get to do with this.
Well, and I am so excited because I am going to physically participate. I will be there on the ground at Perennial Roots Farm for the workshop, and we are going to create, I am creating a Facebook event that I will have in the show notes. So just check out the show notes and you will be able to come and participate in that event via the miracles of modern technology. So don't forget to get your ticket. What is the date for that, Stuart?
Yeah, the date for that is Friday, October 20th. And for the live event, it's going to extend from like 9:45 a.m. Eastern time and go till about whenever it ends, but probably more towards 3 p.m. But so it'll be plenty of information packed into there. And I'm thrilled that you're going to be there, Linda, because that it'll give more people immediately access to stuff that, you know, probably isn't happening in their part of the country, but needs to be, because this is something that once you know how to do it, you're like, wait, I can do that. And once you see the results, there's almost nothing that gets these results that fast. And I mean, it'll be great for anyone who wants to see this.
Well, you know, my overall sinister plan is to spray this country, the whole darn thing. I don't want to spray it. I want to soak it. I want to soak it. I want it coming out of every nook and cranny, folks, because really such an energy, it's such a game changer. It's such an energy shifter. It's an energy shifter. And that's the field where all of us can work. We could work in the field of the energy. Let's shift that energy. Look, everyone that is listening to this right now, not only can you participate in the event, but you can spray your part of the country now using Microbe Makers compost tea in a box. I will put a discount code right in the bottom in the show notes. You could go to microbemakers.com and get 10% off of your first purchase. Now look, Microbe Makers compost tea in a box makes 25 gallons of compost tea. But really what it is a sourdough starter. You know, one part compost tea to eight parts of water if you're covering your compost pile, and on and on and on. So this is really something that we could do cooperatively across the board together. So that makes it so exciting. And you know, with all of the Facebook Live and the Zoom meetings and all the technology, it's just really important that everyone can, in fact, participate.
Absolutely. Like it's a miracle of modern technology. And if that alone doesn't make you believe in magic, biodynamics will.
For sure. Now, are you spraying any equisetum, any horsetail tea during the fall months?
Oh, yeah. Anything that I'm putting to bed will get some more equisetum. It's equisetum, I feel, can be used to prevent fungus as things are developing, but it can also be used to help ripen fruit and keep the fruit from rotting at that point. But it also just kind of helps things crystallize in my mind. It helps the skin form better. It helps the sugars form better. And so in the fall, when I'm getting ripening fruit trees or something, they'll definitely get a dose of that.
And I love brewing it. I love the smell of it. I love brewing it. It's just a very healthy, hearty smell. And, you know, Preparation 500 and 501 and horsetail, all of that right now can be had going to the Josephine Porter Institute website. They are the only not-for-profit that provides the preparation to the masses. So you can go there and get started before you're burying your own horns. Well, once again, Stuart Lundy, I thank you so much for this.
No, thank you, Linda.
This is so much fun, and we will be getting back again with Stuart in a few months so he could explain what does the winter look like? What does the winter feel like biodynamically? Well, thanks again, Stuart, and I'll see you on the flip side.
All right.
All right, everyone. Now, you know what I want you to do. I want you to go farm your yard. So make me happy. Make me so very happy. And go ahead and do that. And tell everyone about our podcast. Share it with everyone so we can once again drive down Broccoli Boulevard and Lettuce Lane. Until the next time, take care.
Next on the Farmyard Podcast, let's meet Farmyard co-founder Marcia, with host Linda Borge and Farmyard co-founder Marcia Howe. This podcast is community supported. We thank everyone for tuning in, and a special thank you goes out to all our Patreon supporters. If you enjoy our content, please subscribe and share. You can help support us through Farmyard, all one word, on patreon.com.